What's up, Beardos? You're listening to episode 221 of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to don't be a jerk.
Don't let me answer your question first. I'm not answering your question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talk about beer.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com. And you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's mini episode, we're going to talk about the vegan response to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Paul, how the hell are you doing right now?
Andy, I'm trying to hang in there. I think in almost every scenario, a situation, I feel like I have it better or as good as most people. But there are definitely certain aspects of my life that have been slightly upturned that are frustrating, to say the least. How are you doing, Andy?
That sounds like you're downplaying it so much. Slightly frustrating. Paul, I am struggling for sure right now for all of the reasons. I know everybody is right now, and you're probably turning to the podcast that you listen to for some sort of distraction from what's going on right now. And certainly today's episode is not going to be that. We're going to be talking about the thing that's on everybody's mind right now. And maybe we'll turn to some totally distracting, just like film reviews or something like that in the near future, just to get away from it a little bit. But yeah, I mean, just the state of everything right now, Paul, is just feels like all of these horrible things kind of piling on top of each other. And this pandemic is really highlighting just how unequal and absurd our current systems are, at least in the United States. And it's tough. And you have all of that coinciding with this election where people apparently don't want to vote for the guy that wants to actually implement all the things that would have made this easier to deal with and easier to deal with moving forward. It's interesting to me because people are treating this like it's a crisis, and it certainly is. But it's almost like I feel like we were kind of already in crisis mode pre this, like people were losing housing and not getting healthcare and all of these things. And this situation has just like exacerbated it. So it's just, the whole thing is just frustrating looking at the likelihood that we're not going to have a candidate that's actually caring to champion the things that we need right now. And then you pile that on top of having all like the vast majority of my income just like stripped away. And I think the uncertainty to me is the biggest part of this whole thing, because when you think about like a storm or a hurricane or something like that, where you have sort of similar responses of people really, you know, buying up lots of resources and preparing and all of that. And you sort of know, okay, well, the storm's going to hit, or this hurricane's going to hit, or something is going to happen, but we know that it will be over in a week, 2 weeks, a month, something like that. And here we're just kind of like, here we are. We're just sitting inside and hoping that our government actually responds appropriately. So it's struggling. And yeah, I find that I have such an immense lack of motivation to do anything. And I've been trying to like unplug from social media and the internet, because it's just scrolling and looking at the next worst thing that's getting worse by the hour. So I would say this episode probably, I kept coming across full articles. I was like, oh man, we should also include that. Oh, we should also include that. But we're going to try and keep our scope narrow today and just dive into this thing. We're going to talk about the vegan response to the coronavirus, the COVID-19 pandemic that is sweeping the world at this point. Maybe we'll call this episode like Vegan for the Coronavirus, as a kind of a follow-up to the discussion we had about the Amazon burning.
Yeah. Interesting. That's a good, Andy, you know, it's like, I feel like we are going to try to keep the scope narrow, but there are, even just like limiting it to the vegan context, I feel like there are still many facets to talk about in terms of the coronavirus and how it relates to vegans and specifically their response to it, our response to it, I guess.
So let's talk about that response. We recorded our mailbag last episode, and as soon as we were done recording, I went on Facebook and saw we had a new question that I was like, ah, that would have been great to throw in that mailbag, but we're going to do it right now. So Lisa J asked us on Facebook, I was wondering how you feel about these memes and posts concerning the coronavirus, basically implying that either vegans don't have to worry about getting coronavirus or things like the example I've added to this message. I'd be very happy to get your take on this. And the image that was added is it's a meme that has Peter Griffin from Family Guy hanging up a sign that said, we wouldn't be in this fucking mess if people stopped eating animals. So, Paul, let's break this down. Obviously, there's I think Lisa's question points to two different things. One, there is vegans putting out this idea that vegans are immune to the coronavirus or perhaps less susceptible. And then I think probably the much bigger discussion we'll have is this idea that this coronavirus was started by eating animals or exploiting animals. And is that true? And yes or no, how should we react to that? How should we use it in our advocacy? Should we use it in our advocacy? So, Paul, I said, hey, Paul.
Yeah.
Can you do a little research and find out what people are saying about vegans being immune to this thing? Like, did you find anything that led you to believe that's sort of a general thought that's being pushed about in the vegan community, or maybe even just the whole food plant-based eater community?
From the little amount of research that I did, Andy, I could not really find anything that was saying that really was pushing the fact that vegans would be, or plant-based eaters would be, immune from it. I think, like, the closest I got was a website that basically just promoted, like, and it was literally answering this direct thing. It was like, hey, people have been emailing me. It was like a, you know, like a well-being type website. People have been emailing me asking, like, what I can do about the coronavirus and those sorts of things. And it was like a long, long post, but really the gist of it was, here are things you can do to boost your immune system. And by boosting your immune system, you know, it's like you are, going to be less likely to be susceptible to the cold and the flu and you would think the coronavirus as well. So that was kind of like the gist that I got from the response. I personally did not see anything that was like, vegans don't need to worry about it at all. And even, you know, I would say even some of the wording from this one site that I had, it was definitely like strongly worded, like, resistance to the coronavirus, maybe more strongly than I would have liked to see. But I feel like this maybe slightly goes along with some of the other things that I saw, which is people, there are some people, and I doubt it's just, even though I was looking just through the vegan lens, I doubt it's just vegans. There are definitely people in, like, the health, you know, the health world that are trying to capitalize on this in being like, hey, we have these products. Like I saw this one, you know, social influencer that's clearly sponsored by this vegan protein shake. Whether or not this person is vegan, I don't know. But the person was like, oh, like, now is a, like, now more than ever, we need to be concerned about our health. So why not try this vegan protein shake type thing? Things that are like, kind of like that I saw that I guess are trying to make the tie, like, hey, you should do this because, even though they're not outright saying it, you should use this product because it's going to help you to be more, at least, resistant to the coronavirus. But I think people would see through that pretty quickly. So yeah, I did not see anything, Andy, that verified that either people were saying that or that it's true. And I would say I don't think that it's true. I don't personally know any vegans that have been afflicted with it, but I would highly doubt there would be any reason why a vegan would be immune to something like that.
Yeah, I have to say, in my personal feed that I have, as well as just from Googling around and looking, that was kind of the impression that I received as well, which was that I'm sure there are some weird corners of, like, the plant-based eater internet that is kind of pushing that idea, because I've seen a few people commenting on it in my feed, but never any direct evidence of that. So one, hey, listener, send us your screenshots so we can talk about it more in depth. But I do, like it is reasonable to say that like sort of the best defense against this right now, if you were to have it, you know, obviously the best defense is staying the fuck home and not talking to anyone, or not talking to anyone, but, you know, not physically interacting with people, keeping a distance, all of that. But in the instance that one gets the coronavirus, the COVID-19, that it's best, it's the best case scenario for you if you have a strong immune system. And so I get why people are trying to make that connection. But obviously, being vegan does not guarantee that you have a strong immune system. Obviously, there's lots of benefits to eating, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and things like that. They're all good for our immune systems for sure. But it feels like it would be silly to say that being vegan makes you immune to just getting a virus. But that certainly I can see why someone would twist, hey, vegans are more likely to eat the things that are helpful to you when you get sick in general. But yeah, I think it'd be silly for anyone to say, if you're vegan, you won't get this virus.
Andy, I'm just imagining next week we're going to get a video from Dr. Esselstein that's like, we could turn the virus on and off, basically.
Oh, boy.
Folks up knives deep cut.
Yeah. So all of that is to say that aside from that, there has been some real varied and wacky responses from the vegan community in regards to this whole thing.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Let's get into those, Andy.
Let's do it. So I think first and foremost, there are so many people, articles, podcasts that have covered this so extensively already. Like the general racist response to this whole thing, because as far as we know right now, it originated in Wuhan, China, which has led to lots of like racism and xenophobia, sadly, which is to be expected and certainly not isolated to the vegan community. But like so many other like isms, things sort of seem to get magnified and exacerbated by vegan activists that want to twist certain things to their advantage. And so the vegan community certainly has had a field day. Some of the vegan community has had a field day with this idea that it comes from China. And I don't know how much time we need to spend on this particularly, Paul, but obviously we condemn that type of thing and it's just ridiculous in general.
Yeah, no, for sure. And Andy, also, this is like, I guess, similarly related point. You know, there's also like a lot of just in general people posting things about like, oh, this happened or this is going on or this is the thing that's going to help you and all that stuff. I feel like we would always promote this, but just do a quick Google. When someone posts something that's like, this is a thing that happened, or, you know, like, this is the thing that's going to help you prevent coronavirus or whatever, or this is what you should be doing, just do a quick Google, because Snopes.com has probably already made a thing about it, especially if it's related to something like this that is in such wide circulation. But I've definitely been seeing people posting things that are like, you know, about like government conspiracies, whether it's like, oh, the Chinese government, this is like a conspiracy from them, or if it's the United States government, or there's this professor that's like was working in China and like he must have been creating the virus, and all these things that are pretty easily dispelled by just a quick Google search. So just make sure you're doing those Google searches before you make those retweets.
Paul, that is always good advice to do a quick Google. Although I will say that in this instance, the Google might provide some conflicting answers. So we're going to do our best to kind of wade through a few of those. So, Paul, I think that in general, I have seen lots of sentiment that is saying, hey, this originated in these, you know, these wet markets in Wuhan, and that eating animals is what has led to this. And if we didn't eat animals, we wouldn't be in this situation. And let's take one specific example of that has become a very, very high profile example of that. And let's just kind of break it down. So on Earthling Ed's Instagram, a post went up, which has since been deleted, but it was shared by the Cowspiracy Instagram as well. So it's still up there. It says, COVID-19 started because we eat animals. Ebola, swine flu, bird flu, HIV, SARS, VCJD started because we eat and exploit animals. COVID-19 would not exist if the world was vegan. Your personal choice to eat animals impacts every living being on the planet. And predictably, this got a huge response, lots of shares, people that were, you know, fist pumping it like right on. And of course, people were saying, hey, this is either straight up wrong or it feels off or maybe even just a little bit insensitive. And something that was interesting, Paul, when I went to go look at this, I don't know if it does it on your phone, but on my laptop, at least, you know how sometimes Facebook will blur out a photo and say, hey, this is graphic content. Are you sure you want to see it? And then you can click it and look at it.
Yeah.
This one did that, but it said like, hey, this might not be entirely true. Click here to find out why and click here to see the post. Did that happen for you?
I'm looking at it right now, Andy. Yep.
On Instagram, it does that?
It says partly false information, see why. And you can click on it and it cites a USA Today article and a fact checker article. Both that say the conclusion is partly false.
Yeah, so obviously I went in to look at that because I'm assuming that must have popped up because so many people flagged it, not necessarily because like there's some roving algorithm that's like, oh, hey, wait a second.
You'd be surprised, Andy. These algorithms are pretty good these days.
So the main source that is linked is the politifact.com article, which says vegan Instagram account spreads misinformation about COVID-19. It's kind of a lengthy article, Paul, but I'm going to quote a couple paragraphs from it right now just for the purposes of our discussion. And it straight up talks about this Instagram post. It's not like talking about everything in like a vague sense. So this article from PolitiFact says, on its website, the CDC says that 3 out of every 4 new or emerging infectious diseases in people comes from animals. And the WHO, the World Health Organization, has said that eating raw or undercooked animal products, including milk and meat, carries a potential risk for infection from Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, MERS, another human coronavirus. But neither statement supports the link that the activist draws here between COVID-19 and meat eating. Scientists are still trying to figure out the source of COVID-19, but there is no evidence that the outbreak began because of meat consumption. Early in the outbreak, many patients in the virus epicenter of Wuhan, China, had connections to a large seafood and live animal market, which suggested animal-to-person spread, but later cases had no connection to the market, suggesting person-to-person spread. Scientists recently traced the first known case of COVID-19 to November of 2019 in a patient with no connection to the market. There's plenty of scientific literature linking the human coronaviruses to bats and other wild animals, particularly horseshoe bats in China. However, those studies stipulate that intermediate hosts are needed between bats and humans for disease to spread, and meat isn't necessarily part of the equation. For example, scientists first thought the Ebola outbreak started with the consumption of bat meat in Guinea, but Time reported that patient zero was likely infected by bat droppings that contaminated something she put in her mouth. MERS, MERS, was also primarily spread through contact with live camels as opposed to camel meat. The Instagram post contains an element of truth but ignores critical facts that would give a different impression. We rate it mostly false.
That's interesting, Andy, because I feel like if all I read was that, if all I had was that PolitiFact, the information that they just told me, I don't think I would have rated it mostly false.
Yeah. So, Paul, let me say, going into this, you know what? You know, I love a good debunk. I was all ready to be like, look how wrong this is and shame on it. You know, like I was like gearing up for that type of episode, you know?
Yeah.
And after reading that, I had that same response that you did, which was like, okay, yeah, I get that they haven't conclusively made the link between eating animals in general. And I get that the original Earthling Ed post said COVID-19 started because we eat animals. And perhaps it would be better off saying it started because we exploit animals, which it does say in the next line. And it almost feels like this PolitiFact article, it was being just sort of a little nitpicky about the exact wording. Yeah. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, because I mean, even with the MERS thing, they're like, oh yeah, it wasn't because we ate camels. It's because we were in contact with camels. And it's like, well, yeah, that still means that it's like, it was the camels that brought it to us. And if we weren't in the contact with them, I guess though, the Ebola outbreak makes it, that's the one that makes it seem like less about exploiting, because that they make it seem like it could have just been like some random bat flying by, pooped in some person's salad, and then that person ate the salad. Like, that makes it seem like it could have been accidental. But I mean, you have to imagine, like, in a place where they are exploiting a particular animal, so there is lots of contact with that animal, if you're then like, oh, we've traced this disease or this virus back to this animal, and yes, we don't exactly know how it got from the animal to the human, of course, like, creating more exposure between the humans and creating more contact between the humans and the animals, you would think that that would increase the chances that something like that would happen, right? Like, I feel like that's not a tremendous leap to make.
Yeah. So Paul, it's just so very interesting to me that even the articles that are trying to debunk this thing are still really giving a lot of ammunition for the argument that the world should go vegan, because this meme, again, it says COVID-19 would not exist if the world was vegan. And I think there's a chance it could exist even if that was the case. But, you know, I think a lot of people are taking go vegan to mean if we stopped eating animals, as opposed to probably stopped riding camels or using them in like a petting zoo or something, like, you know, like I'm thinking of other instances in which someone could be in contact with a camel. And so it's like, yeah, if the world was vegan, if people wouldn't be going to petting zoos and people wouldn't be riding camels. So even though the article gives us lots of good information, it almost feels like it's making more of a semantic argument than one that's in good faith as to the accuracy of the meme.
Yeah. And I mean, literally the first line that they say is from the CDC, 3 out of every 4 new and emerging infectious diseases come from animals. It's like, isn't that reason enough to be like, yeah, it's like, yeah, we would still have some of them left, but 75% of these diseases we probably wouldn't have. I feel like that's huge. Like, that's a three-fourths that's a lot.
Yeah. And so the article is saying, well, the fact that even that's coming from the CDC, they're like, but it's not talking specifically about COVID-19, which is like, yes, that's true. But Paul, let me actually read a little bit from that USA Today article that you mentioned that was also linked on the, hey, this might not be totally true. Fact check: is COVID-19 caused by human consumption of animals? And of course, we'll put links to all of the articles we talk about today in our show notes. And it's a pretty lengthy article. It basically says that, like, yes, all of the diseases that are listed in the graphic are in fact zoonotic, which means that they originate in animals and occur when humans are near animals. And it gives the common instances in which that would occur, which is hunting, ranching, and pets. So you're like, okay, like, aren't hunting and ranching associated with eating animals pretty much? Mm-hmm. And some could argue pets are associated with the exploitation of animals. That's a podcast for another day. And it said most of them originated by hunting or human consumption. It talks about the 1918 flu, which apparently killed 50 million people, which was caused by H1N1, which likely originated in a Kansas chicken farm, and then popped up again in 2019, originating in pig populations. It talks about the those are from animals that we like eat somehow and exploit, but also the plague in the 14th century was caused by fleas, and malaria was caused by our proximity to primates and mosquitoes. So it's kind of like, well, not all of them are. So let me quote from this article.
Using that old black plague argument.
Classic. Okay. It is impossible to determine whether COVID-19 would have arisen without the existence of the wet markets or settings like it. And is this the first time we've used the term wet markets? It's essentially a market where, like, live and dead animals are sold. but it is true that such markets supply the conditions for such diseases to arise and infect humans. Indeed, SARS, or severe acute respiratory syndrome, resulted from a virus transferred from bats to civet cats and then to humans. Discovered in 2003, SARS originated at a wet market similar to the one now suspected to be the origin of COVID-19. Similarly, it is difficult to determine how many zoonotic diseases would arise in a world where humans didn't eat meat. Yet even with the preventative measures in the American food systems, like feeding livestock antibiotics and pathogen-reducing treatments, like the chlorine washing of meat, tasty. The proximity to animals still allows for the possibility that diseases might be transferred through direct human-animal contact. And this is their conclusion. We rate that the claim that COVID-19 was caused by eating animals is partly false because some of the claim is not supported by our research. While it is true that many infectious diseases that have wreaked havoc on humans come from animals, it is not entirely the case that ending the consumption of animals would put an end to such diseases. Limiting contact with animals, even assuming they are not being consumed by humans, would be necessary to lessen the chance that viruses and other pathogens transfer between species and infect humans. So, Paul, these are like the two shining examples of debunks that are offered up by the fact check thing. And I read both of them and I'm like, I guess it doesn't exclude the eating animals thing, but it does sort of say our use of animals in so many different forms. And I would say specifically our encroaching on their habitats is like the main culprit of so many of these diseases, even if we're not eating the animals.
It seems like, Andy, if the post said, so the post, just to remind you, the headline says COVID-19 started because we eat animals. It seems like if it instead said COVID-19 probably started because we eat animals, they would have been like, yeah, that's true. It probably did start because we eat animals. Or like you've been saying, if they include eat and exploit, eat or exploit, something like that. Because again, and Andy, even though it's like, you know, we like to look through things very critically. And of course we do believe that language matters. And so, yes, like I guess the statement COVID-19 started because we eat animals is not possible at this point to verify whether it is true. It seems like it's probably true, or it's probably true that it was some exposure in that area that did cause this. So yeah, it really, to rate it mostly false seems mostly false, I guess.
and the USA Today article that I was just reading from, their conclusion was that it was partly false. But it's certainly, if you just like shared that, if someone posted something, like posted the meme, and then someone just shared like one of these two articles where the headline, well, that doesn't say in the headline, I guess, but like the first thing is like, hey, it's mostly false or partly false. I think you would assume, well, this whole thing is hogwash, you know?
Well, not vegan, but Andy, the PolitiFact headline literally says vegan Instagram spreads misinformation.
Okay.
And
all right. Fair
and
enough.
It's like not,
I've been corrected, Paul. My statement was entirely false.
Like I wish that the rating had said undeterminable, or at this point, not sure, you know, like, because it could be true. And basically what these things are saying is we don't know if it's true or not, but it could be true. And in fact, 3 out of 4 of cases seem to indicate that it is true.
Yeah. So Paul, I don't know. I feel like, why do I feel resistant to admitting this fact? You're leaning forward like you have a response.
Well, I think, Andy, you know, this is a mini episode, but leading this into maybe another direction is, even if it is true, or even if it is, you know, like not able to determine, but the evidence seems to indicate that some sort of animal human contact did cause this, the next question I think is, should we be pushing this? And if we think, no, we shouldn't be pushing this, then maybe that's where some of the uncomfortableness is coming from. Because I think that in addition to debating whether or not this is true, I've seen a lot of vegans debating whether or not, you know, now is the time to be pushing this sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, Paul, I think that totally hits the nail on the head, is because semantics aside and sort of, you know, the willingness of some vegans to maybe gloss over the intricacies of this whole thing, certainly many vegan advocates have used this as a chance to chastise people and to sort of really shame and just sort of play this like, ha, gotcha, you know, you damn carnist, you did it again, this is all your fault. And I think because the fact that there is, if not entirely true, certainly a large majority of the sentiment is true, that people are using that as an opportunity to play the gotcha game. And I think that's why I feel, because it almost makes you feel like, am I lumped in with those people if I admit that it seems highly likely that our exploitation of animals, even if it's not just eating them or are encroaching on their natural habitats, is what caused this, or certainly significant amount of other diseases that have caused so much harm to the human species. I think like that's my reticence. Like, I feel like I have to like disavow myself from it or be like, that's not really the case, just so I don't get lumped in with the people that have created such an ugly response to the whole thing.
Well, Andy, I can kind of, I can give you a good example of the type of response that even if, because Andy, I don't think that sharing something like this, maybe with the wording slightly changed, you know, but sharing something like this on the surface level, I feel like I don't think it's necessarily bad that people in general are informed that, like, hey, by the way, the CDC says 3 out of every 4 new and emerging infectious diseases are because we are exploiting and using animals. Now, they didn't use those words. I'm using slightly those words, using and exploiting. But Andy, I can give you an example of like the type of way that I wouldn't want this to be said. And that's from our good friends at PETA, who had a nice article that said, PETA's answer to fears over new coronavirus: go vegan right now. And so, Andy, I found this article while I was researching, like, okay, do vegans think that they're immune to the coronavirus because of their diet? And the headline of this article certainly makes it seem like that's what they're going to go into. But instead, the article basically just goes into this information, all this information that we've just been saying, you know, like all these other diseases that have risen because of our contact with animals. And so basically PETA's conclusion is like, hey, look at all these diseases we got because of our exploitation of animals, so that's why you should go vegan. But that literally does nothing to, and here's the reason why I don't like this response, because that does nothing about the situation that people are in right now, which is for many, many people, like a terrible, terrible situation. And so the headline, the title, and of course we know that sometimes editors change titles around to make them more clickbaity. The title's kind of making it seem like, hey, all you people that are terrified of the situation you're in right now, like, come to us, we will save you. And then it's just like, you need to go vegan because it could potentially prevent the next thing that's going to happen. But we don't actually have anything to do right now, so sorry you're in this terrible situation. Which seems like the thing that PETA does. Sorry you're in this terrible situation, but you should go vegan because maybe it will help out a different situation. So that's like, Andy, that's an example of the response that I would not want people to be giving, you know, like this thing that's kind of like, as PETA always seems to be doing, it's exploiting a situation in order to push veganism, which is not what I want.
Yeah. Yeah, Paul. I mean, in even though certainly a population that moves toward veganism is a good thing for all of the reasons, you know, in and of itself, the exploitation of animals, obviously we believe that that is front and center and the reason for people to go vegan. But yeah, it does feel very just like they didn't kind of read the room, you know, and I think that there's a lot of situations in which one could take the stance that I feel kind of powerless right now, but I know that by going vegan, I am sort of like taking control over my small section of the globe and my contributions to all of these things. And here it just, as you've said, that doesn't actually help the immediate situation right now. And it does feel like not a message that's really going to land with people, you know? Even though I think that we need systemic change, obviously. It's almost like, I don't know if you watched the most recent presidential debate, but essentially the, you know, just between Biden and Bernie, and the big dividing line was that Bernie is arguing for like universal health care forever and like debt forgiveness and or like student loan forgiveness and all of these things that would really help people in this specific time and place, but also forever, and also people that are affected in crises that aren't the coronavirus. And Biden was saying, we just need to do all of this stuff right now, and we can worry about implementing other things later, you know? And it's like, we need that systemic change that Bernie's asking for. Like, we can't just be looking at, like, taking that Biden approach that is, we just have to throw everything we can at this problem right now and not really worry about the systemic change. And so, I don't know, like, it feels like we should still be saying it's important to go vegan, but also, and even if it is just for like the long term, like, right?
Yeah, no, I think it just, I don't know. I think promoting veganism as a response to coronavirus, like without acknowledging that the situation that people are in, or framing it in a way as though it's going to save people while not providing any sort of evidence that it will, I feel like is just not the way to go about it. So I definitely agree with you that we can still be promoting veganism, but you know, I think we need to be, like you say, Andy, we need to read the room.
But what if they do it with like a cool custom face mask or something?
Oh God. Yes, PETA is currently sold out, Andy, of custom face masks, go vegan face masks that say meat markets are breeding grounds for disease, go vegan, PETA, which I feel like this is truly the worst way to go about this.
Paul, do you think that they actually sold out or they just put it up there to make an outrageous thing?
Well, it's also possible, Andy, that they sold out because they said, we're going to make these, and then they went to go order face masks, and there were none. Andy, this is irresponsible on another level because there's currently a face mask shortage for, you know, like medical, like people working in hospitals and stuff like that, people in the medical field. So I feel like this is irresponsible on a secondary level because it's potentially taking away masks that those people actually need.
Maybe.
I rate that claim partially true.
I guess, Paul, to me, the biggest issue is something you already mentioned, which is essentially like, is now the time? And I feel like this is the kind of debate that always happens after or during any tragedy that's happening. Like there will be a mass shooting and the debate over gun control pops up and people say now is not the time because people are hurting and all of this stuff. And like, I don't know. I just don't know if I agree with that, Paul. I feel like when is the time other than when people are focused on the thing that's happening right now? Doesn't it seem weird to be like, let's wait till everything's stable and it's behind us and nobody really cares or is thinking about it anymore because humans are not really good at thinking about long-term preventative measures. They're only good at thinking about short-term band-aids. Like, doesn't it seem like right now is the time?
Andy, in a rare moment of overgeneralization, I think I have to disagree with you about some of the things that you've just said, because I think the comparison between pushing for gun control after a shooting is vastly different than the situation we're in now, if only because, like, incidents of gun violence are happening pretty much constantly in the United States. So it's like, it's not like when one's, unfortunately, it's not like when one happens we need to capitalize on that moment because there's probably going to be another instance of that happening versus something like
Paul,
this where it's,
I understand the point you're making there, but also it seems like there's occasionally instances which are so horrible that they capture the national spotlight. Unfortunately, most mass shootings now are like a blip in the 24-hour news cycle, whereas you have shootings like the Newtown shooting, or the I forget what, the one in Florida that happened.
Pulse.
And that was but also Pulse, the Pulse nightclub shooting did, but there was another like high school shooting that happened down there. And it feels like there are certain instances that are so horrific that they captured a national attention for more than a day or two. And doesn't it feel like, as much as it sucks and as much as people are hurting, that it is the time when people are raw enough with emotion to consider alternatives and to consider doing something about it, as opposed to when things are stable?
Well, Andy, the second point that I was going to make, why it is not an apt comparison, was because with this coronavirus thing, it seems to be impacting the majority of people's lives in a way that really no other event in my lifetime, maybe save 9/11, in no other event has, you know, in a way that like everyone is kind of being affected. And I mean, even more so, it's like people's, like more people's livelihoods are being put at risk now in terms of like, am I going to have a job? How am I going to manage my kids now that they're home, and am I going to be able to get food, or can I even go out to get food without getting sick? Like all these things where I feel like it's just a different situation where it's much more, and this is, you know, Andy, this is testament to why things are, I feel like things are finally happening in the government on a government level, because people in the government are also being affected by it. And when people in the government finally get affected by things, that's when they say, oh, we should probably do something about this. So, I feel like it's just feels different because it's like everyone is being impacted in some way. And that's something that I've never felt before.
So, I mean, I guess I agree with that, because if you're talking about like the gun control debate after a particularly horrific mass shooting, even though a lot of people might feel like around the world might feel emotionally affected by it, obviously those things are tragic and they affect me as well. But the people that are directly affected by it in that instance are a relatively small, in terms of global scale speaking, at least, relatively small group of people that could feasibly avoid participating in the debate or avoid news coverage and all that stuff. And yeah, like right now, everybody is affected, even if their situation isn't bad. Like maybe they're just some at home, you know, blogger and their income hasn't been affected at all, but it's still affecting people they know. And so I agree that it might feel like an even more sensitive subject to bring up than like something that was affecting a much smaller group of people. So I do think that that is a good point. But I still don't feel like we can't talk about it.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you, Andy. I just feel like, I don't know. I just want to have tact, you know?
So Paul, that's where I land on all this, which is, I think it is, in my opinion, short-sighted to say now is not the time. But I think how we talk about it, especially at this time, is the most important thing. I think that the blame game that I've seen from so many people, I've seen high profile vegan activists saying this is, you know, global, like universal karma for all the exploitation we've done to animals, and a lot of posts that are like pointing out maybe some factual information, and then the caption is like, this is because you love bacon too much to give it up, and things like that. And I feel like those types of tones to me are there to make the activist feel better about having like the moral high ground, so they have a position to scold people from, as opposed to having a productive and informative conversation about the steps we can take moving forward to mitigate this type of thing from happening again.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Andy, I thought of another reason why it's not a good analogy that you made before. And I think I was getting to this is that this thing that's happening right now is like anyone that I've talked to, no matter what age they are, has said, I've never had anything like this happen in my life. Like, this is something that is to this extent, you know, because it's like there have been these other diseases, but as far as I know, like the schools have never said, oh yeah, your kid's going home and they're not going back to school this year for the rest of the year, and to a world and like in such a global extent as well. So it just seems like this is a hopefully once in a lifetime thing, and not to be a reason why we shouldn't be promoting veganism anyways, but is it possible that some people aren't going to be as receptive because they're going to be like, this is such a fluke, basically. Like, this is such an off chance thing that happened. All these circumstances had to happen specifically for this thing to outbreak, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is certainly a likely thing that people are like, this is immensely horrible and affecting us on a global scale, unprecedented to us before. But also, this is the first time it's happened. I wasn't alive in 1918, so what are the odds it's going to happen again in my lifetime? And life is short. I want to eat that bacon buddy.
Bacon buddies. So I guess, like, isn't there, I don't know. And Andy, maybe when things settle down, which will hopefully be sooner rather than later, when things settle down, maybe people will be like, okay, things are back to normal, like, let's make sure that shit never happens again. Maybe like that's the time to really start pushing it when people, it's still fresh in people's memories. But I don't know if Andy, I don't know if there's a good argument to promote veganism right this second that specifically applies to this situation that people are in, because I don't want to fall into this trap that PETA just fell in by making it seem like you can do something that's going to help people's situation. Because how many people are going to be thinking about, like, in their situation right now, how many people are going to be like, wow, I really got to prevent this from happening the next time it's going to happen? Like, people are too concerned about, people are very concerned about their livelihood right now, you know? And there's nothing about going vegan that seems to be helping people with the coronavirus right now, you know? It's already out there.
What about if someone was to make a post talking about the systemic changes that we need and say, if we want to make this much easier on ourselves, if this happens again, and also just make life better for everybody, it's important that we have Medicare for all, and, you know, maybe cancel student loan debt, or implement like a universal basic income, and also stop exploiting animals, because that is where a lot of this, you know, what if it's kind of like a post like that, that's like, these are the systemic changes that would make life better for everybody, certainly better for the animals. And it's not necessarily like a fuck you blood mouth, like, you fucking caused this shit, you deserve what you get kind of thing, which is the vibe I get from so many of these posts. What if it is something that's sort of calmly and rationally saying, this is a part of the problem that needs to change? And wouldn't it be better to get that in the public's conscious right now, get that in the zeitgeist right now, as opposed to just being this weird thing that gets brought up after the fact?
Andy, that doesn't sound memeable though. And I think I say that in jest, but also it's like, this post that Earthling Ed made it makes sense to me why this would get, you know, all these retweets and all these shares. I feel like it's hard, Andy, to have a nuanced conversation in this meme culture that we live in.
Paul, that's for damn sure. But I mean, like, I think also right now it's even more reason to counter the racist narrative that's happening right now, because I think a lot of people in the West will be like, well, China's just got to get their shit together. And that's not an us problem. They started it. It's coming over here, and it'll just stoke more racism and xenophobia.
I can see, Andy, you know what? I can see that aspect being memeified. Like, this isn't, you know, I think that is part of what Earthling Ed was trying to get at with his original posts. Like, those people's problem over there. This is because as a whole, the entire world is exploiting animals. And like, that's why these things are happening. So I do think that I think that something like that could be beneficial at combating that racist narrative that you were just pointing out.
Yeah. Well, Paul, unless you have any final thoughts, I think my takeaway is simply, It's an important conversation to have. It's important that we're accurate in how we present the information. And it's important that when we're having those conversations or making our posts, that we practice having empathy for those that we are reaching out to.
And also, I've learned, Andy, that if Instagram says something is partially false or mostly false, to read the article, because that might not be the case.
Yes, indeed.
So if you want to get your two cents in, which I'm sure, you know, I'm sure many people have many different opinions on this and we want to hear them, send those into thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. We would love to hear what you have to say about this or any other questions that you have. Send those in. And yeah, Andy, do you still have any events coming up?
No, they are rapidly dropping off / getting pushed to November. Who knows when Paul, the very pessimistic / I think I'm going to say realistic side of me is saying, I bet I won't do another Veg Fest this year.
Jeez.
I hope I'm wrong. I hope this all dies down by the summer with the heat and all of that stuff. And everything comes back in like 3 or 4 months. I'm praying to my non-denominational atheist God that that is the case. But we'll certainly keep everyone updated if there are any events that are coming up.
And until then, compassioncode.com. Get those shirts.
If you would, in a rare moment of me promoting myself, if you would like to help support me in these trying times, compassionco.com is a great way to do it. If you would like to help support the podcast right now, thebeardedvegans.com/beardo. That'll give you options for one-time donations and Patreon, all that stuff. We really appreciate the people that are throwing a little extra money our way right now. And Paul, I was perusing PolitiFact earlier, and they rated the following 7 words as extremely true.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.